Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yevamos Daf Mem Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the top of Daf Mem Tes at the Mishnah. Before we begin the Mishnah, we glance at the side where we have a nosei, a topic heading, where we have written Deos Shonos ba Mishnah. There are different opinions, different Tanaic authorities that appear in the Mishnah. Ma goreim lemamzerus. What type of relationship, of forbidden man-woman relationship, would result in the birth of an illegitimate child, a mamzer? Bear in mind that a mamzer is Jewish, however, he is unfit to marry another Jew, another regular, standard Jew of pure heritage. He is allowed to marry another mamzeres like himself, and there are other possibilities that exist. However, to marry into the rank and file of the Jewish people, that is forbidden. The Mishnah, Ezu Mamzer, Kol She'er Basar Shu B'loy Yavoy, Divrei Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva represents a very strict opinion whereby he will include many types of forbidden relations that would produce Mamzerus. So let's take a look at Rashi at the top. Kol She'er Basar Shu B'loy Yavoy, Kol Kurvo, any relative, Shehi Belav, that is forbidden to you in a negative form, negative command. Even if it does not contain or it does not result in a kores punishment, kores penalty, kagon anusas aviv, Rabbi Yehuda, the Havya Balav, the lo yegale knaf aviv, a person's father, let us say he rapes a woman. According to the Tana Rabbi Yehuda, that woman is prohibited to the son in the form of a negative command based on the pasuk of Lo Yigale Knaf Oviv. This is a pasuk found in Dvarim, Perek Chaf Gimel, Pasuk Aleph. We will see this pasuk cited later in the Gemara. Umachmas Kurva Di Oviv, the Isur, the prohibition, is through his father. Because the father raped the woman, that creates a prohibition in Isur. Or a man who had released his sister-in-law through chalitza, for him to then have relations with her would be a negative command known as lo yiboneh, v'have lav de kurva. Below Kores. It's another example of a negative command that is through a relative. Say they are considered related. There are other forms of negative command that are not relative related, but let us take, for example, a Kohen cannot marry a Grusha. That's a negative command, but it's not a function. A Grusha is a divorcee, and that's not a function of someone who is related. There's more to say on this topic, as we'll see in the Gemara. But in the meantime, Rabbi Akiva will say that any man-woman relationship that carries with it a negative prohibition, a lo saseh, even if it doesn't have with it a kores punishment, kores, for example, is characteristic of brother-sister type relations. When I say type relations, you can have situations of mother's brother, father's brother. Those are brother-sister type relations. Those are forbidden, but carry with them a kores penalty. We continue in the Mishnah. Shimon Atimli Oimer, Kol Shechayovim Olof Kores Bidei Shamayim, Valocha Kidvorov. Shimon Atimli is more lenient in the sense that he limits Mamzerus to those kind of relations that would carry with them the Kores punishment. Kores is a term we don't translate, we just use that as a term. Hopefully people understand what that is. It means to be cut off, whether it means to die young or die leaving no children or children dying in one's lifetime. These are different possibilities of what Kores might be. But it has to be, in order to create Mamzerus, it would have to be a prohibition that carries with it the Kores punishment. And the Mishnah builds into itself, and that the Halacha follows Shimon HaTimni. For Rebbe Yoshua Omer, Kol Shechayev Malov Misas Beisdin. He is even more limiting as to what creates Mamzerus. Only those kind of forbidden relations that would be punishable by court execution. Those are featured in Maseches Sanhedrin, all of the different relatives that are all of the different forbidden or illicit intimacies that are punishable by death. Son having relations with his mother, father with daughter, and other examples. Mother-in-law, for example, is another one of those. Mother-in-law, son-in-law, the father-in-law, daughter-in-law, those are punishable by court execution. Omar Rabbi Shimon ben Azai, Motsosi Megillas Yuchsin B'Yerushalayim. Rabbi Shimon ben Azai says, I found a scroll that deals with genealogy, deals with pedigree, the Kosuv Ba, and it said in the following. It said in it the following. Ish Ploni Mamzer Me'eshes Ish. So-and-so, and apparently the name was spelled out in this particular scroll, and it proclaims that so-and-so is a Mamzer because his mother was married to a man and she had intimacy with another man, producing this fellow as their son. Now, Eishes Ish, we want to emphasize, is an example of Chayve Misas Besen. That means a married woman having relations with another man, so that that forbidden relationship carries with it a court execution punishment. And the Megillas Yuchsin, by spelling it out in this fashion, that he is a Mamzer because of the Eishes Ish, the married woman relationship, that's Lekayim Divrei Rabbi Yeshua. That would support Rabbi Yeshua's approach. Namely, that Mamzerus results only from those illicit relations that are punishable by court execution. The Mishnah goes on to present two scenarios where the sister of the spoken about woman will be mutter, will be muteris. And that will be self-explanatory as we go on. Ishto mesa, and the next section you'll see is yevimto mesa. So ishto mesa, a person's wife dies, mutter bachosa. He is allowed to marry the wife's sister. The Gemara will point out that this section of the Mishnah is truly unnecessary because you can see it in the psukim of the Torah itself, which we call zil kri beirav. Go read it in the psukim. Nevertheless, we have it here in the Mishnah. Gersha umesa mutar bachos. A person divorces his wife and then she dies, you can marry her sister. This is in contrast with a person that divorces his wife and she remains alive, you cannot marry her sister. Nisesli acher umesa, or your wife was, after she was divorced, she married someone else, and then died, muter bachosa, you can marry her sister. Yevimto shemesa, muter bachosa. A person, let's say, you have Reuven and Shimon are brothers. Reuven died, leaving a widow, and now that widow is, and if assuming that Reuven left no children, so that widow is bound to Shimon. So that's his Yavoma. While she's alive, you cannot marry her sister. That the sister of this widow is called Achois Zekukasa, the sister of the one connected to you. However, if the widow dies, Mutar Bachosa, you can marry her sister. Cholatzlo Mesa, once you do Chalitza with the Yavama, and then she dies, Mutar Bachosa. Again, this is in contrast with the case of if you simply did Chalitza with the widow, and she has a sister, and the widow, your brother's widow, is still alive, the sister is forbidden on the grounds of being Achos Chalutzaso, the sister of the one with whom you did Chalitza. But if after Chalitza she dies, then Mutar Bachosa, you can marry her sister. Niseis Liacher Mumesa. If the Chalutza was released, in other words, the widow was released, she married someone else and then died, Mutar Bachosa, you can marry her sister. And now the Gemara goes into sources for the different opinions we saw in the Mishnah. On the side of the Gemara, under our Nosei, our topic heading, we have an outline of what we will see in the Gemara. So, Aleph are Mekoros L'deos Shebesoich Rabbi Akiva. Just skip a moment down. Beis, you see, is Mekoros Shimon HaTimni, and Gimel is Mekoros Rabbi Yeshua. Those are the three Tanaic opinions we saw in the Mishnah. However, within Rabbi Akiva, there are a variety of opinions. Rabbi Akiva, once again, was fairly expansive in how Mamzerus could come about. We can call him a very strict opinion in that sense, that he creates Mamzerus from we'll say, low-level types of forbidden intimacies. We said in the Mishnah that Rabbi Akiva will provide or account for Mamzerus even from an intimacy that is a mere negative command without a kores penalty. So in our note we say on the side, Mekoros L'deos Shebesoch Rabbi Akiva, the different opinions within Rabbi Akiva, Diyesh Mamzeros Mechaive, number one, Lavin D'She'er, negative commands that are based on relatives. In other words, relatives that are Osir B'Isur Lav. There's another opinion within the Rabbi Akiva framework that says Chayve Lavin Afilu She'enum She'er, negative commands where a man-woman relationship is prohibited even if they are not related. There's no family element between them, but nevertheless they cannot cohabit by virtue of a negative command. Even that can produce Mamzerus. And number three, which is a rather extreme approach, even from forbidden relations where the type of prohibition, the level of prohibition is called an Isur Aseh, where the Torah is commanding a person to marry a certain type of individual, and we'll see more about that, how it comes out to be an Isur Aseh. We'll see in the Rashi later on, the example cited is a person, a man who marries an Egyptian convert. The Torah says that when an Egyptian converts to Judaism, one has to wait till a third generation of that Egyptian convert before they can marry rank and file, standard miuchas Jewish people with a pure Jewish background. So only a third generation, and that is a positive command. It says Dor Shlishi Yavo, that third generation shall come into the camp, so to speak, into the Jewish fold. So that's stated in a positive vein. Dor Shlishi Yavo, third generation shall enter. Now, what about the second generation? So the second generation is called a lav habol michlala. Say it's a negative command that is derived from the positive. So since it's, even though it sounds like it's negative, that not, we say third generation, yes, second generation no, but that no is derived from the positive, and the rule is that alav habol michlal asay asay, a negative command that's derived from a positive, where the scripture spells out the halacha, the ruling, in a positive fashion, and we infer from it the negative, that carries with it the status of a positive command. You might say, well, what difference does it make? How you classify it? Is it a positive or a negative? Well, there's a major difference. If one violates a pure, straight-out negative, non-inferred, but rather explicit negative command, he could be subject to lashing. One who violates a positive command, then there is no lashing penalty, punishment accompanying it. So within Rabbi Akiva, we see three levels or three possibilities of how mamzerus could come about, but they represent three different schools of thought. One is negative commands that are based on family relations. Another is explicit negative commands in general. And the third approach is even those forbidden relations that are classified as positive commands. The next thing we'll see in the Gemara is the Makoro Shel Shimon HaTimni, who says that Mamzeris comes Michiyuvei Kores. And the third opinion, we'll have to see the source for him, that's Makoro Shel Rabbi Yeshua, Rak Michiyuv Misas Beis Din. The Gemara. My time with Rabbi Kiva. What is the basis of Rabbi Kiva, who says that Mamzeris could result from mere negative command relations, intimacies that are forbidden by virtue of a loisase? The Gemara answers, and take note of the fact that we're calling this a long answer. We're going to include within this answer all the different opinions as to what Rabbi Akiva represents. So the first is, Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, Lo yikach ish es eshes aviv, velo yigale knaf aviv. That is the Pasuk, and in focusing on that second expression of Elo Yigale Knaf Aviv, the interpretation is Knaf Shira Aviv Lo Yigale. Now, Knaf literally is the corner of a garment, but it is a reference to a woman that the father had been with, Lo Yigale, you, the son, cannot expose. That means you cannot have intimacy with her. Now, who is being referred to in this phrase, the knaf aviv? In the first part of the pasuk, it says, one shall not take the wife of one's father. Well, that's very clear. But what is this, the knaf aviv? So, v'sovar law, Rabbi Yehuda, the Mishnah in presenting Rabbi Akiva holds like Rabbi Yehuda's interpretation of that pasuk, the Omar Be'anusas Aviv HaKosuf Medaber, that this pasuk is referring to a woman that one's father raped. He did not marry her, he simply raped her. Dehavyalo Chayve Lavin. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, Anusas Aviv is referred to in this pasuk, and that she is prohibited to the son. There are other opinions on the woman who was raped by one's father. This we saw at the beginning of the Masechta. But according to the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, she is prohibited to the son to the tune of a loisaseh. V'somichle, and in the vicinity of that pasuk, it says, you'll notice we started with a quote from pasuk Aleph, and we go now to pasuk Gimel. So v'somichle, it says, near that pasuk, lo yavo mamzer b'kal Hashem, the prohibition of a mamzer marrying into the Jewish people. Alma, we see from this, may hani have a mamzer. From this type of prohibition, from a negative command, mamzerus could result. Now, we saw before in Rashi that the woman that was raped is prohibited to this particular son because the father raped her. So it's considered a prohibition of kurva, of relatives. However, there's another version, Ulo Rabbi Simoi, the Marbe She'ar Chayve Lavin Belav the She'er. Be careful with the reading. That's why in Gemara markings, we put in, on rare occasion, we put in the actual vowelization. Because here you can have an actual opposite meaning of terms. If you don't, and if you don't have the vowelization, you'll end up messing things up. Where he's marbe she'ar means other chayvei lavin that are not the she'er. She'er means relatives, non-relative prohibitions. What would be an example of that, of non-relative prohibitions? So if we look in the Rashi, we see, he says, in, under the Dibur Masul, Rabbi Simoid, to keep things simple, we're not going to start with the beginning of that Rashi, but if you skim down a little bit into that Dibur Masul, you can see a squiggle underlined Kegoin. Kegoin, Matsu Grushoso Mishenises. A person who, let us say, divorced a woman, and she married someone else, and then he took her back. That is a negative command. Ukegoin Mesino li Yisrael, the Kaima, the Lois is Chatein Bom. There's a negative command not to marry the women of the seven nations. A man shall not marry a woman from those nations, the seven nations that occupied the area of Eretz Yisrael before the Jews conquered it. Or another example is an Ammonite man that marries a Bas Yisrael. There's a negative command, Lo Yavo Amoni. Lo Yavo Amoni U Moavi B'Kal Hashem. A man from the Ammonite people is forbidden to marry a Jewish woman. That union would create Mamzerus. So those are examples of Lavim that are not based on Kurva, based on someone related, family relationship. Continuing in the Gemara, Ulurebi Yeshevov, the Marbe Afilu Chayve Asay. According to, so far we have Rabbi Simoi, who is Marbe other kinds of Lavin, and Rabbi Yeshevov, who understands Rabbi Akiva to be Marbe Afilu Chayve Asay. And we cited an example before of a Chayve Asay is a Jewish woman marrying an Egyptian convert, or vice versa, before the third generation of conversion. That's a chiyuv asay. Nafka lehu, so according to Rabbi Simoi and Rabbi Yeshevov, who expand Rabbi Akiva, the expand the understanding of Rabbi Akiva to include even these kind of prohibitions, they learn out the Torah source for that from the Vav, mi vilo. The pasuk said vilo yegale knap oviv. You might notice in the original pasuk we have a little arrow to the side, and you can skim up and try to see the arrow above where that Vav appeared. The Vav adds these kind of forbidden relations, so that within Rabbi Akiva, all kinds of forbidden relations, even if they don't carry with them severe punishments like Kores or Misas Beisdin, nevertheless, the resultant offspring will be a Mamzer. The Shimon HaTimni Savar Lo Karabonon, the Amri, Shimon HaTimni, who says that Mamzeris comes through Kores, Shimon HaTimni holds like the Rabbonon. Now, the Rabbonon referred to here, this is in contrast to Rabbi Yehuda that we saw cited before in the let's say the fourth line of the Gemara itself, where we saw the Sovarlok Rabbi Yehuda. This is in contrast to that, where Shimon HaTimni holds like the Rabbonan in interpreting that the Pasuk of Eloya Galik Nachavid, the Amri B'Shemeres Yavam Shel Oviv HaKosuv Medaber. The lo yegale knaf oviv is not talking about the woman raped by one's father, but rather it's a reference to the one's father's brother's widow. We call the yevama. Now, a father's brother's widow is basically the nephew looking at his uncle's wife. A nephew looking at his uncle's wife, if it's father's brother's wife, she is prohibited to the nephew to the tune of a kores punishment. So a son who has relations, intimacy with the shomeris yavam of one's father, to have yolo chayve krisus. That's an example of a chiyuv kores. She happens to be, as we said, one's father's brother's wife. V'samechle, and near that in the Torah, as we saw before, it says lo yavo mamzer. The prohibition of marrying a mamzer. Amo mechayve krisus. Have a mamzer, that mamzerus comes about through relations like that, that are punishable by kores. So before we go on, let us just go over what we've said. For some, this discussion might appear complicated. There is a pasuk that we saw at the opening of the Gemara, Dvarim Perichav Gimel Pasuk Aleph. It had read, Lo yikach ish es eshes aviv, V'lo yigale knaf aviv, and following that it spoke about the prohibition of mamzerus. We know there's a machloikis between the names that we see marked in the geometric form, Rebbe Yehuda versus the Rabbanan. How do we understand V'lo yigale knaf aviv? According to Rebbe Yehuda, V'lo yigale knaf aviv is a woman raped by one's father. That is, according to Rebbe Yehuda, punishable by a simple negative command. According to the Rabbanan, that pasuk v'lo yigale knaf aviv, the Rabbanan who argue with Rebbe Yehuda, take that to mean a shomeris yavam of one's father or one's uncle's wife. So if you approach the pasuk like Rebbe Yehuda did, you would then come out with the Rebbe Kiva result, where even a negative command would produce mamzerus. If you approach the pasuk like the Rabbanan do, so lo yigale knaf aviv represents a kores punishment, a kores relationship, and that's the Shimon HaTimni approach to things. What we find in this kind of gemaras, you find in many gemaras throughout the Shas, is that there's a combination of opinions where, in this example, Rebbe Kiva would be learning the pasuk like Rebbe Yehuda learns it, versus Shimon HaTimni, who learns the pasuk of Lo Yigale Knaf Aviv like the Rabbanon learn the pasuk. Now the third opinion, Rebbe Yehoshua, what is the basis of his opinion? What was Rebbe Yehoshua's opinion? That a forbidden relationship to the tune of court execution, Chiyuv Meisas Beis Din, only the, we'll call it, the most severe type of prohibited relationship could result in mamzerus. Rebbe Yehoshua, he explains, Lichtoif Rachmana Lo Yigale. Lo Yikach Loma Li. Now let us look at Rashi together. Rashi, toward the end of the narrow lines, Hochi Gar Sinon, Rebbe Yehoshua, Lichtoif Rachmana Lo Yigale Klomar. If the pasuk was talking about what the other opinions claimed it was talking about, either shomeres yavam of his father, the father's brother's widow, or a woman raped by one's father, lichtoiv lo yigale knaf aviv luchudei. Let the Torah write just that. And that would tell us that mamzerus could result from chiyuv krisus if you take the Rabbanan approach to the pasuk, or from a negative command if you take Rebbe Yehuda's approach to the pasuk. The kol shekein me'eshes av dehavya bekore sumisa, and all the more so mamzerus would result if a son has relations with one's father's wife, which is punishable by court execution. And when we say court execution, every case of court execution has within it the potential for kores. That's, of course, if you have no witnesses or no warning was given beforehand. So Rabbi Yeshua says, if the pasuk is to be understood like the other opinions, let's go back to the Gemara text, four lines from the bottom, lichtoiv rachmana lo yigaleh, and then I would be able to conclude certainly misas beisin type of forbidden relations would result in mamzerus. Lo yikach lomali. Why does the Torah write lo yikach ish es eshes aviv? Why? That would seem to be overkill. Pardon the pun on that. But why does the Torah write that if they are correct? Ela lav hachi kama. Rather, they're not correct as far as Rabbi Yeshua is concerned. Rather, the Torah is saying thusly, mi lo yikach ad lo yigaleh have mamzer, which means only something like Ashes Aviv, father's wife, that is written between the words lo yikach up till, not including the words lo yigaleh. So up till lo yigaleh, that will cause mamzerus. Fei lo ave mamzer. But more than that, meaning to include more than misas basin, to include more prohibitions that are less severe than misas basin, that we do not do. You'll ask then, okay, why then does the Torah bother writing lo yigaleh knafov? What's it doing in this pasuk? So Rashi raises that question five, six lines from the bottom of the Rashi commentary, and he says there, "V'kashio knaf oviv l'may kasve." What's knaf oviv doing here? E b'shomeres yavam. If it's in fact referring to the shomeres yavam, lav or lav b'shnei lavim, it's telling me that a person, a son that has relations with his father's sister-in-law who's waiting for Yibum, he'll be in violation of two negative commands. Father's brother's sister, plus this new lav of lo yigaleh knaf oviv. And Rashi spells them out. Erva sachi oviv lo yigaleh v'lav de lo yigaleh knaf oviv. V'i v'anusas oviv ashmina d'asura. And if it's referring to anusas oviv, so the Torah has to tell us that once a man rapes a woman, the son of that man is forbidden to her. He's not punishable by court execution, or not even by kores, but he is forbidden. So there is a purpose in writing lo yigaleh knaf oviv in this pasuk according to Rabbi Yeshua. However, it is not there to tell me that mamzerus results from that lower level offense. Let's read that then. Let's read Rabbi Yeshua again. Three lines from the bottom of the Gemara. Elo lav hochi komar. What is the pasuk telling me? Mi lo yikach ad lo yigaleh have mamzer. From lo yikach until the words lo yigaleh would create mamzer. So what's written there in the Torah? Eshes aviv, which is punishable by court execution. Tfei lo have mamzer. But more than that, would not include mamzerus. Would not result in mamzerus. Omar Abaye. Akol Moidim. Everyone will agree, even Shimon HaTimni will agree. Shimon HaTimni was one that said that a chiyuv kores relationship, a prohibited man-woman relationship that would result in kores, produces mamzerus. There are exceptions, though. So everyone will agree, the Baal al Hanida, a man has relations with a menstruant woman. Even one's wife, when she's experiencing the monthly female cycle, she's prohibited to her husband. And if husband and wife cohabit when she is a Nida, the couple is punishable by kores. Very, very severe offense. If one does engage in a nida relationship, even though it carries with it a kores penalty, everyone agrees that it will not result in mamzerus. Another point of agreement, v'al hasoita. She'ein Havlad Mamzer. So when we say everyone agrees, Rashi points out with regard to the Baal Anida, even Shimon HaTimni, who said that Kares would result in Mamzerus, he will agree that in this case the Baal Anida, which is Kares punishable, will not result in Kares. And the Al HaSoita, everyone will agree, even Rabbi Akiva will agree, that one who has relations with a Sota, She'ein Havlad Mamzer. What is a Sota? A man is married to a woman who had been warned not to be alone with another man. And lo and behold, she goes and is alone with another man. The Torah says that the husband is usher to his wife until they go through the Beis HaMikdash procedure, checking her out with the drinking of the water. So, if we look in Rashi at the top, Abala Soita, Eishas Isha Zinsa, the Kaimelon Dasur Labaila, and Rashi goes a little further than the way I explained it. And Eishas Isha Zinsa is a married woman that had forbidden relations with someone else, that had, because she's married, she's forbidden to some other man. What is her status with regard to her husband, to her own husband? So, from the Torah standpoint, she's forbidden. She's Asur Labaila Perakama. Mani Mekayim Asher Hu Tamo, the Rabos Soito Shinistra Yafagab the Chayvei Lavini, even though it's a Chiyuv Lav, even though it carries with it a penalty, it's considered a negative command, it's not punishable by Kores, but it is a negative command for the husband to be with her. Moidav Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Kiva will conceive, that Rabbi Kiva, the Polagad Rabbona B'masnisen, though that Rabbi Kiva that argues with the Rabbanan in the Mishnah, the Machzik Rishasa, the Kamar Davlad Mamzer, Rabbi Kiva holds that a man who divorced a woman and she married someone else and he takes her back, the offspring is a Mamzer. Afagav the Lav Chayve Lav in the Sherhu Hocha Moidi the Ein Vlad Mamzer. That even though Machzik Rishasa is a negative command, it's not a function of a relative, of a family relative, here he will concede that the Vlad is not a Mamzer. So we continue in the Gemara. The Gemara now gives sources for these two exceptions. The point that Abaye mentioned, that everyone will agree in the case of a Baal Anida, that the Vlad is not a Mamzer, and in the case of Baal HaSoita, a man has relations with his wife that had been Mizaneh, the Vlad is not a Mamzer. Even though both, of course, are forbidden relations. The Gemara continues, Nida, Deha, Tafsi, Ba, Kiddushin. Shenemar. The term Tafsi, Ba, Kiddushin means that a man who let's say marries a nida, a marital bond is formed. This is in contrast with other chiyuvei kares. For example, a brother who attempts to marry his sister, the sister is not married to the brother. The practical difference between saying if a marital bond is formed or not can be illustrated easily by asking the question, is a divorce document necessary in order to sever the relationship? So if a brother attempts to marry a sister, he gives her money in matrimony, they split. There's no bond that's formed. However, if a man marries a nida, a woman who is experiencing her monthly cycle, who hasn't been mitayer herself yet, she is a nida, he cannot cohabit with her, and if he would, it would be, just like brother-sister, a Kores penalty. Nevertheless, if he marries her, if he offers her money and she agrees to marry him, from that point on, if they want to split up, a get will be necessary. So we say that by Nida, Tafsi Ba Kiddushin, by virtue of the fact that a marital bond can be formed with a Nida, that creates an equation, if you will, that since a marital bond could be formed, Mamzerus will not result. Shenemar Vatihi Nidosa Olav. Afilu Bishas Nidosa. The word Vatihi is what was what the Meforshim call Loshon Havaya, the verb form of to be. But in this case it means to be married. So the you can see in this verse, Nidosa, Vatihi, Nidosa, that even though she's a Nida, she nevertheless Vatihi. She becomes married. Let's read that line again in the Gemara. Shenemar Vati Nidosa, Filu Bishas Nidosa, Tafsi Bo Kedushin. Even when she's a Nida, Kedushin does take hold. A marital bond is formed. Soita Nami Tafsi Bo Kedushin. With regard to the Sota, the marital bond nevertheless exists. Tanyo Nami Hochi. We have a Tanaic source that supports this. Hakol Moidim Bebo Al Hanida. That's number one. We saw that already. The Al HaSoito, that's number two, which we also saw. And here's a surprise. The Al Shomeres Yavam She'ein Havlad Mamzer. If you have a Tanaic source that adds a third example, this is a woman whose husband died leaving no children. There was a surviving brother, but she didn't wait for Yibum nor Chalitza. She went ahead and married someone else. That's just a need. It's a Yavama Shenosa Lashuk. That is, for that man, the outsider, to marry the widow is a violation of a negative command. Lotia Eishes Hamesa Chutza Liishzar. That's what the Pasuk says. However, that union will not result in Mamzerus, according to this Tanaic source. We on a backtrack for a moment, we said the Sota, there is no Mamzerus when the man's wife had intimacy with some other man. The husband, though, is forbidden to continue living with his wife. If he does cohabit and impregnate her, the resultant child will not be a mamzer. And Rashi explains, "Dotapsi bo kedushin la isha di afle achas shezinsa lo poku mina kedusha rishonim." That even after she had relations with that other man, that doesn't obliterate her original marital status with her husband. So, as we said before, there's an equation that appears in this Gemara. Though I must say, you have to look into Meforshim on the topic. There's much more to say regarding this point. But from our vantage point in this Gemara, if there is Tfisas Kedushin, if a marital bond can be formed or exists, then the resultant offspring child from that intimacy will not produce Mamzerus. Now, we saw in this Tanaic source a third example, something that Abaye had not mentioned. So the Gemara turns its attention to Abaye. Why didn't he mention this third example of Abaye? Shomeres Yava Misafgale. He is in doubt. E Kirav, E Kishmuel. There's a machlokes, or a difference of approach. Rav holds that a Shomeres Yavam that marries someone else, she marries what we call this Lashuk, without Chalitza, there is no Tfisas Kedushin. That's Rav's opinion. Well, according to Rav then, since there's no Tfisas Kedushin and there is a Lav, Rabbi Kiva would say there is Mamzerus. However, Abai is not sure if Rav's approach is the one to take. Shmuel is simply not sure about that. According to Shmuel, if someone marries a Shomeres Yavam, some outsider marries her before she received Chalitza, it could be that there is Tfisas Kedushin, and Shmuel would require a divorce document to separate them. According to Rav's approach, where there's no Tfisas Kedushin, they just split, there would be no need for a get. However, that would produce Mamzerus. Abaye, as we said, is in doubt. how to go Rav's route with the Shomer Yavam or Shmuel's approach. Therefore, he didn't want to commit himself by saying Hakol Moedim, everyone would agree regarding the Shomer Yavam Lashuk and the non-Mamzerus status of such a child. Omer of Shimon ben Azai, Bechule, Toni, Shimon ben Azai Omer. This is a brisa that parallels the Mishnah, expands a little bit, and he says, Matsasi Megillas Yuchsev Yushalayim, the Kosovo, I found this scroll in Jerusalem, and there was written in it several points. One is, Kosovo Ish Ploni Mamzer Me'eshes Ish, that we saw already in the Mishnah. That so-and-so, specifying his name, here the Gemara doesn't tell us his name, but so-and-so is a mamzer because his mother was married to a particular man, had relations with another man, and that other man is this fellow's father. So his father had relations with a married woman, married to someone else, producing him, he is a mamzer. Because of all, another point that was mentioned in this scroll that Ben Azai found, Mishnas Rabbi Lezer Ben Yankov Kav Venoki, the teachings of Rabbi Lezer Ben Yankov, though few, Kav is a measure, but it's a small measure. So it's a way of saying that the teachings of Rabbi Lezer Ben Yankov are few in the Shas. However, Venoki, they're very clean, meaning when he says something, he sifted out any debris, any unnecessary information, and comes to very clear conclusions. And as a result of that, when his name appears, we will end up taking his opinion very seriously. Rashi says, "B'chol mokum shenizkar halacha kamos, wherever he is mentioned, the halacha will follow him." And a third point that he found in this Megillas Tainis, in this Megillas Yuchasin, in this scroll of genealogy, is Menashe Horag Es Yeshaya. King Menashe was the son of Chizkiyo HaMelech, that he killed the prophet Yeshaya. On the side of the Gemara, we have a Nosei topic heading, and we indicate Ad Daf Nun Omen Aleph. Menashe Dones Yeshaya Lemus. The King Menashe, he ruled that the prophet Isaiah is to be executed. The Tainishem Ashoshitvarim Negev Sukim Sha'omra Moshe Rabbeinu, on the grounds that the prophet said three things, he authored three verses that contradict the Torah, that contradict the Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu. So based on that, King Menashe felt that the prophet Yeshaya should die. So we're going to be occupied with this issue until Daf Nun Amud Aleph, as we said, close to the end of the perek. Omar Rava, Meidan Dainei V'Katle. That means Menashe, Meidan judged him, Yeshaya, and executed him. Omar Lay. Take note of the structure of the Gemara. There's a long question. The point of this long question is to present what was bothering Menashe. Menashe, the king, raised questions on that which Yeshaya had written. And there's a, toward the end of the long question, you'll notice there's a bracketed section. And at the end of this, as part of this story, Menashe condemns Yeshaya on the grounds of three contradictory verses, contradictory to the Torah. Yeshaya does not respond. The Gemara will explain why Yeshaya remains quiet. We can say ahead of time, before we even read the Gemara, Yeshaya knew that Menashe, who, by the way, was not known as a pious individual, he was known as a Rasha, even though later in life he did tshuva, but he was known, as far as Yeshaya was concerned, as someone that would not accept his response. He wouldn't accept Yeshaya's defense. And therefore, Yeshaya said, I might as well, knowing that he's not going to accept my arguments, if he kills me thinking that he's right, without hearing any defense, so at least he'll be what's called shogeg. He's considered, we'll say, less deliberate, considered his act of killing me will be an act of shogeg, as opposed to if I tell him that he's making a mistake and he still kills me, then he, Menashe, will be mazed, deliberate. Therefore, he said, I'm not going to change matters. I'm not going to improve this situation by responding to him, so he chose to remain silent. The Gemara, though, says, after all is said and done, the points that Menashe raises in our long question are points that need to be addressed. After the long question, you see a long answer marking. It's at that point that the Gemara will then resolve the psukim, resolve the seeming contradiction, offer an explanation for why Yeshaya wrote what he did in his prophecy. The Gemara. Omar Lay, King Yeshaya, the King Menashe says to Yeshaya, Moshe Rabbah Omar, Moshe your master, Moshe Rabbeinu lived many generations before, but he was the father of all prophets, so to speak. It's a figure of speech. So he, or the master of all prophets. He said, Ki lo yirani ha'odom v'chai. In the Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu records that the Almighty says, man cannot see me and continue living. V'ad amres, and you write, I see Hashem sitting on the lofty great throne. So you're contradictory. Moshe Rabbeinu says, Lo Yirani Adam. And here you're saying, where? And I saw. Moshe Rabbeinu Chomar, number two, Mi Kashem Elokeinu B'chol Kareinu Elav. Who is like our wonderful God that can be summoned at all times? He's always open for prayer and supplication. The Adamris, and you say, Dear Shu Hashem, Behimotso, seek out the Almighty only when He is found. In other words, only at times. He's not always available. So you're contradicting Moshe Rabbeinu regarding the availability of the Almighty to receive prayers. Number three, Moshe Rabbeinu Omar, Es Mispar Yomecha Amalei. In the Torah it says, I will fill your days, meaning I will enable you to live your complete, we'll say, assigned life. In other words, the person has a certain, we'll say, length of life that the Almighty determines, and if a person merits it, he will live out his full life till that which was predetermined or pre-assigned. That's, I will fill it up to the top, but not overflowing. The Adamris, but you say, Behosafti al Yomecha Chomeshes Reishona. And you describe a situation of a person having 15 added years, meaning there's a full life and then an added over the top. That would contradict what Moshe Rabbeinu says. After the brackets, the Gemara says, Mikomokom Koshu Kroya Dodi. After we say what we do in the bracketed section, the psukim still remain difficult. And the Gemara will explain them afterwards. Within the brackets, as we said before, Yeshaya remains silent, and the Gemara explains what his thinking was. Omar Yeshaya. Upon hearing Menashe's objections, Yeshaya says, he says to himself, Yodano be galo metabu ma the emole. I know that he will not accept that which I say to him. The e emole ishvai mezid. And if I do say something, ishvayo mezid, I will make him into a deliberate murderer. Therefore, it's better for me to remain silent, and if he kills me, he, the Menashe, will not be held as severe an offender as if I do tell him. Omar Shem Ivla Barza. The prophet pronounced the ineffable name of the Almighty, and miraculously he was absorbed into an Erez tree. In other words, the prophet says, I'm going to try to run and save myself rather than stand here and try to refute his objections. So he tries to escape, and he does so with this, let's say, this miraculous fashion and the ineffable name. My understanding of things is that enables the prophet to assume supernatural powers, you know, connecting with the Almighty. The Almighty, of course, is above nature, and something supernatural took place, and he was absorbed into a tree. Asua la'arzov and Asrua, they apparently were aware of what happened. The king and his men were aware. They brought that tree and they started to saw it, knowing that the prophet was inside the tree. They were sawing and sawing, and according to Rashi, it seems that they sawed right through the prophet's mouth. What a terrible way to go. It's just a sad, traumatic type of death. Now, the Gemara is grappling with this. Why was that his way of death? Mishum the Omar, because the prophet Yeshaya to say that he was a great man would be an understatement. To be a prophet of his proportions, we can't even imagine how great the individual was. However, he slipped up on something from which we derive a very important lesson. He said regarding the Jewish people, he was disgruntled, and he said, I dwell amongst a profane mouthed people. Rashi adds, when the prophet said that, he wasn't saying so in the context of chastising. He was simply speaking ill, if you like the term, bad mouthing the Jewish people. That is something that one must be very careful to avoid. If one has something to say and it's in the context of constructive criticism and you can do something about it, so then say what you need to say in order to improve a situation. But to simply sit back in an armchair and badmouth individuals and certainly the entire Jewish people or sections of the Jewish people, this is something that one must avoid. And look how severe that sin is. A man of such piety, such greatness, like Yeshaya, but this was the reason for his suffering, this type of death. We continue in the Gemara, after the bracketed section where we see Yeshaya is remaining silent and what eventually his fate was, but nevertheless the psukim remain difficult. We numbered off three different objections that Menashe raised against the psukim found from the prophet of Yeshaya. The Gemara answers, Vo'er es Hashem. How could the prophet say, and I beheld Hashem, when Moshe Rabbeinu says, you cannot behold Hashem? Kidisanya, kol ha-neviim nistaklu baspaklaria shena me'ira. All the prophets, other than Moshe Rabbeinu, had their prophecy through visions that were eino me'ira, that were not 100% crystal clear. So people who have visions, but things are not crystal clear, they can end up coming to incorrect conclusions. They can think they see when they don't actually see. Moshe Rabbeinu nistakel basmaklar mi'ira. Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy was different. He saw things with extreme clarity, and therefore, because of his clarity, he knew that he could not perceive the Almighty. We're in the context of a Daf Yomi Shir, so we're going to be moving on, but we can't move on without simply saying that these ideas are extremely deep ideas yes to see, not to see, to the Kodesh Baruch Hu is not something that one could possibly perceive in the first place. So, nevertheless, these are topics that are need much, much broader discussion. Nevertheless, on a very superficial level, the prophet, because of his inability to see with 100% clarity, thought that he was able to perceive the presence of the Almighty, and Moshe Rabbeinu, with his extreme clarity, Aspaklaria Hameira, realized that you cannot perceive the Almighty. Dirshu Hashem Bimotso, we saw that the prophet said, seek out the Almighty when he is available, and yet Moshe Rabbeinu says, B'chol Koreinu Elov, he's always available. There's no contradiction. Habiyachin, Habit Sibur. When you're dealing with an individual, private individual, a person who prays in private, it's questionable whether his prayers will be heard. They'll be heard they'll be heard behimotso. That's behimotso, when he is available. When it comes to the tzibor, tefillah b'tzibor, prayers that are done in the context of a group, a minyan of 10 people, then those prayers are always heard by the Almighty. The yochid emas, we say that the private individual's prayers will be heard only when he is available. When is that availability time? Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Rabo Bar Avua, Elu Asora Yomim Shebein Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Those are the 10 days that we refer to as Aseres Yimei Tshuva, the days that extend from Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur. Number 3, Es Mispar Yomecha Malei, the issue of a person's life, his lifespan, or his determined length of life. Is there a possibility of years being added to it? The Gemara says regarding this tanoihi, the issue is a machlokes tanoim, the sanya. We have a Tanaic source beginning here and continuing till the upper few lines of Nun Amud Aleph. Es mispar yomecha amalei. That's the pasuk we saw quoted from the Torah. Elu shnei dora. Shnei means the years of, the years that are assigned to a person. Elu shnei doros. Zocha, if a person is of merit, mashlimin lo, he gets the full amount that was originally allotted to him. Lo zocha, if he does not merit, he has a certain too many sins, we'll say, then pochasinlo, divrei Rabbi Akiva. Then his years are subtracted from his original allotted amount. So you see, according to Rabbi Akiva, there's no possibility of a person receiving more than the allotted number of years. V'chachamim omrim, zocha moisifin loy. Loy zocha poichasin lo. According to the Chachamim, you can see that a person who, because of his merits, can actually have years added. And v'amalei, the word v'amalei doesn't mean just filled up, but it means added to. If he doesn't merit, this, of course, could result in his losing years from the allotted number. Omru lo l'Rabbi Akiva, hare hu omer, the Rabbanon who do entertain this idea of adding to the allotted number, they said, well, the Pasuk seems to bear out what we say. The Pasuk from Yeshaya, Vosafti al yomecha chomeshes reishana, I will add to your life. This was a Pasuk in the context of Chizkiyo HaMelech, that he merited having 15 years added to his life. Omar Lohem, the Rabbi Kiva says in response, those 15 years weren't added to his allotted number, but rather Misheloi Hoisifu Lo. Those were years that he was to live anyway. However, as a result of events in his life, he had merited to have those 15 years as part of his life to live out the full allotment. We look at Rashi on this topic, on the second line from the Mishilo Sifalo. Elo shemitchila hayu rotzim livchos mishanav. There was a thought to reduce his years, his allotted years. That thought that had come up as a possibility regarding the king Chizkiyahu. But as events unfolded, those years were not subtracted, and rather the 15 years that they had thought to subtract were granted to him to fill up the original allotted number of years. Teda, and the Rabbi Kiva goes on to say, and you should know, and as I can bear out my opinion, Sharei, and now here we're going to go through a line or two of Gemara, and then we'll look at Rashi to explain it. Sharei Novi Oimeid Umisnabe, the prophet arose in the years in the time of Yeravam. Yeravam is a time period much earlier than Chizkiyo HaMelech. Chizkiyo HaMelech was the great-grandfather of a king known by the name of Yoshiyahu. So there was a Navi that arose in the time of Yeravam and said, Hine ben Nolad the base David Yoshiyahu Shmo. So there was a prophet prophesying that years, generations later, a descendant from the house of David will be born by the name of Yoshiyahu. And when this prophecy was said, the Adayin Loi Noilad Menashe. Menashe was the grandfather of Yoshiyahu. So when this prophecy was said, even his grandfather wasn't born. Now Menashe, let's emphasize, was the son of Chizkiyahu. That is by way of background. Now we look at Rashi. Sharei Novi Nisnabe Bimei Yeravam Shonim Harbe Koidem. A prophet arose in the years of Yeravam, many years before the birth of Yoshiyahu, and he said, Hine ben Nolad the base David Yoshiyahu Shmo. A child will be born from the house of David by Yoshiyahu by name. Ubishas Chol Yoshel Chizkiyah Adayin Loi Noilad Menashe. And when Chizkiyah was deathly ill, Menashe had not yet been born. Shemi Menu Yotze Yoshiyahu. From Menashe, Yoshiyahu eventually was born. As we said, it was his grandson. Heve Omer, from here we therefore see Bishas Cholyoi Gozru Livchois Mishonov. When he was ill, he was deathly ill, and we said Menashe wasn't born yet. He was going to die before Menashe, the grandfather of Yoshiyahu, was born. He was going to die before Menashe was going to be born. What does that show you? That shows that there was a gezeirah to reduce his original allotted number of years. He had a greater number of allotted years than he was at the time he was deathly ill. We see there was prophecy that he was going to produce Yoshiyahu who would come through Menashe. So he was going to have to live beyond his deathly ill state. So what happened? So it must be that when he was deathly ill, there was this thought from heaven that he should die now. Ukshazocha Hishlimulo, and when he merited the miracle of being healed, they returned those missing years during which Menashe would be born, and giving rise eventually to Yoshiyahu. So Rabbi Kiva says, from this incident, we see that there is an original allotted number of years, If a person doesn't merit it, that original allotted number could be reduced. And if he then merits, the original allotted number of years could be returned to the individual. But nothing about going beyond the original allotted number. So now, we continue in the Gemara, V'Rabbanan. What do the Rabbanan say about this? Seems to be a pretty solid proof that when we speak about when the Pasuk mentions V'Hosafti Loch Chameshes Reishana, V'Hosafti Alameh Chameshes Shana, seems to be simply returning the original allotted number. The Rabbanan say, Miksiv Michizkiah, where does it say anywhere that Yoshio was to come through Chizkio? Lebeis David Ksiv. The prophecy said that King Yoshio would come from the house of David. The descendants of David were not limited just to Chizkio. Imi Chizkio nolad, imi neshachrina. If he would be born from Chizkio, fine. He could come through Chizkio, but if Chizkio would die, never bearing Menashe, so as far as the prophecy is concerned, Yoshio could come through some other descendant from Beis David, from the house of David. So the attempt of Rabbi Akiva to say, you see the concept of Zocha Mashlimin Lo from the prophecy of Hinei Ben Nolad LeBeis David Yoshio Shmo, you don't see that in a conclusive fashion. The Mishnah had mentioned Ishto Shemesa, a person's wife that dies, you can marry her sister, Yevinto Shemesa, if one's Yevama, one's sister-in-law dies before you do Yibum with her, so you can marry her sister. Omar of Yosef, Kan Shona Rebbe Mishnah Sheino Tzricha. Here, Rebbe teaches a Mishnah that you don't really need. Why don't you really need it? Because this very information you can see in a Pasuk in the Torah. Vayikra Perek Yudches, Pasuk Yudches. Rashi quotes the Pasuk, Oleo Bechayel. The one's wife's sister is forbidden only one when one's wife is still alive. But if she's not alive, you're allowed to marry her sister. Therefore, the Mishnah didn't have to tell me that information. Nevertheless, it did. So be it. As you can see, with that, we have finished the fourth perek of Yevamos. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.